Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. Derek Van Riper here with James Anderson and Mike Doria. Going to start with the NFC injuries and James stepping in for Mario Puig this week. Of course, we have two teams on bye, one on each side, one in Pittsburgh, of course, and Carolina getting the final bye weeks of the season. We're going to start with the Falcons this week, James. A handful of names dinged up, but none really expected to be limited in this game. Devin Hester and Harry Douglas both probable with their respective injuries. Julio Jones has been dealing with an illness, but he returned to practice on Friday. He's listed as probable. Seems like there's a bug maybe going around because Steven Jackson missed practice on Thursday, but he's expected to play as well. Falcons-Browns game to me, I looked at it earlier, the over-under I think is 47 for this game. I feel like both quarterbacks are going to produce. I mean, you get Josh Gordon back for the Browns. You have Joe Hayden on the Cleveland defense, but he can't cover Roddy White and Julio Jones. I think Matt Ryan's actually going to be able to take advantage of a Cleveland defense that's been pretty soft this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of people excited that Josh Gordon's going to be back and kind of can't wait to use him in daily leagues and the like. But I mean, Brian Hoyer is a guy that maybe would be, you know, a solid option if you're looking for a cheaper quarterback indoors. You got to like that. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you there. Maybe Roddy White's a good option with Julio Jones kind of struggling coming off that illness. Probably matched up against Joe Hayden. Roddy White might be a guy to target as well.
Yeah, I feel like Roddy White's been undervalued for a few weeks, and the production has started to get back closer to what many people were looking for if they bought into Roddy White as a bounce-back candidate this season. But this game, even though it's two teams I ordinarily wouldn't care about, I feel like does bring a decent amount to the table from a fantasy standpoint. Of course, the Browns running back situation and the return of Gordon, always worth monitoring. Let's move on to the Lions for this week. They're on the road at New England. It's a 1 Eastern kickoff. Reggie Bush is questionable with an ankle injury. He was limited in practice all week. It just makes me wonder if, even if he goes, what type of role is he really going to have? I feel like it's going to be Joik Bell once again getting the bulk of the touches.
Yeah, if you've got to start one of these guys, it's definitely Bell. He was very successful last week on a per-carry basis. They didn't give him the ball probably as much as they should have, but you've also got Theo Riddick kind of waiting there. Kind of in this similar role as Reggie Bush. So, yeah, I mean, he's not likely to be highly involved. I don't know. What do you make of this game? I think that, for me, if the Lions keep it close, I feel like that's an accomplishment. Like, the way this Patriots team's firing on all cylinders offensively, it seems like they have just a bunch of different weapons besides Gronk that seem to step up from week to week. I think if the Lions can kind of keep this a one-score game, I'd be pretty impressed.
Yeah, I look at this as, if the game is close, it's probably low scoring. I don't see the Lions offense against the Patriots defense putting up enough points to keep it close, but I think the Lions defense can play well enough to maybe slow down the Patriots. That's one possible outcome for me. I'm not confident in Golden Tate this week. He's coming off a bad game. He's fine health-wise. He's got a hip injury, but he's probable, even though he's a little limited on Friday. I think about what the Patriots did against the Colts on Sunday night. You could see Darrell Revis possibly take Tate instead of Megatron, and the Patriots could then try to just double Calvin Johnson or bracket him, which I look at as a possible way to take away Tate and then limit Johnson as much as you possibly can.
I think that would be, yeah, I mean, that seems like it'd be the optimal strategy. And, you know, given the Patriots, you know, defensive coaching staff, I would assume that's the route they're going to go. I mean, Tate's the type of guy that you would assume a guy like Revis could kind of bottle up. Just kind of your more prototypical wide receiver, whereas Calvin Johnson, even some of the best corners struggle to keep him in check. So, yeah, I think that's probably the route they go. Obviously, if you have Calvin, you're starting him. Tate, you know, maybe he's kind of the guy that you're kind of on the fence about in a flex spot. If you have a better option, I mean, it might not be a bad time to sit him.
I did a short segment with 120 Sports today, and they were asking me about quarterbacks I would sit down, and Matthew Stafford might be a guy that I would sit at this point. It depends on your alternatives, but I wouldn't expect the same type of catch-up or garbage time production from him as I would from other quarterbacks. I mean, like, Andrew Luck to me is matchup proof, so he got his over the course of last week. But Stafford has not been the same player this year as he has been really the last 3 or 4 years, and it's more because of the volume. You know, it's kind of the opposite of what's happening with DeMarco Murray in the Dallas running game, where because the Lions defense has played so well, the number of attempts for Stafford have gone down, and he's never been a great YPA guy anyway, even with Calvin Johnson.
I heard a stat that Matthew Stafford is like 0 for his last 16 in road games against teams that had a winning record the prior season. So, you know, that's definitely one kind of pointing in the Patriots' favor here. If I had to guess, I think the Patriots might win by 10, maybe more than that. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, you might look at it and say, well, this is going to be high scoring because they're going to have to keep up. I'm not so convinced that they're able to do that.
Right. I think the Lions' offense is very middle of the road at this point. Some people might look at it as above average because of the pass-catching options, but you're not going to convince me of that until they actually go on the road against a good defense and prove it first. Let's talk about the Bears. They're going to be hosting the Bucks. A couple of receivers a little dinged up here. Josh Morgan, Brandon Marshall, and Alshon Jeffery are all listed as probable with shoulder, ankle, and hamstring injuries, respectively. Brandon Marshall was limited on Friday. Jeffery was a full participant on Friday. I'm not really worried about either one of these guys. And I'm looking at this game, and you think about how bad Tampa's defense has been at times. That Lovie Smith defense really hasn't come together just yet. The personnel is very questionable. This looks like a great spot for Jay Cutler and the Bears receivers.
Yeah, I had this sort of feeling after they went out, that Bears offense went off last week, and kind of regretting that I didn't try to buy low on some of these Bears weapons on offense, because it does sort of have the makings of a team that might just go on a run sort of to close out the season, at least offensively, where they just kind of just let that offense loose to kind of just throw it up, try to compile points, you know, throw caution to the wind, because what do they really have to play for other than, you know, to try to build up confidence in that quarterback position? I mean, they're kind of out of it in the playoff hunt, really. So, I mean, there's no point in being, you know, cautious here offensively. So, yeah, I like all these options this week. Jeffery, Marshall, not worried about those injuries at all. Look for Forte to have a pretty big day. So, yeah, I mean, good things all around for the Bears.
On the other side for the Bucks, Charles Sims is questionable with an ankle injury. Doug Martin is questionable technically with an ankle injury, but I think life is just getting him down at this point. I don't really know what to expect from him, even if he gets a chance to play. I mean, this is an ideal spot for any offensive player. The Bears defense has been just horrendous this year, bottom five defense overall. If Sims goes and gets the bulk of the carries again, I would actually want to try to use him in a daily setting, and I don't really have many full season places, so I can't use him there. But if Sims were to sit and Martin were to get the start, I'm tempted to say I would even maybe consider Martin in a tournament setting where no one's going to own him, because the price has to be rock bottom at this point. But even that seems pretty bold, because Bobby Rainey is still in the mix. I feel like the Bucks have just soured on Doug Martin to the point where even if he's healthy, his role could be third fiddle.
Yeah, I kind of like Bobby Rainey in a tournament. If you're going to try to get a cheap option in there, I just think that this kind of has the makings of one of the situations that's going to be frustrating to read from week to week, sort of like the Browns used to be before they cut Ben Tate. I think that Sims is the guy, the hot guy that everyone's, you know, trying to use this week, trying to pick up, trying to trade for. I'm not so convinced that it's just going to be his show the rest of the season. I could see Bobby Rainey having a few more notable moments. I think this might be one of them.
Looking at the Bucks defense, a couple of key players are banged up. Alteron Verner, their big free agent addition at corner, has a hamstring injury. He is questionable, which already the defense is bad enough even when Verner can play. So the fact that he might be limited or possibly out of this game, I think, also bodes well for that Bears passing attack. And Bucks star linebacker Lavonte David is a game-time decision. He also has a hamstring injury. So a lot to like with the Bears and Bucks. And, you know, as long as the weather's not too bad this weekend, of course, here in the Midwest, it's been freezing lately. If it's not too windy in Chicago on Sunday, I could see a lot of points on the board from both sides.
Have you been doing a lot of just kind of double checking the temperatures? I feel like I have. I've looked up. I feel like half the cities in the U.S. that are kind of in the northern half, because it seems like, you know, it's hard to keep track of where this weather's going. I don't want to be starting some guy in a blizzard. Obviously, we know the Buffalo situation, but have you been kind of keeping tabs on all these games and what's going to be the weather on Sunday?
I was going to sweep through on Saturday and just make sure I didn't have to make any last-minute pickups based on the weather, because, I mean, a couple days out, it just seems like it's even hard to rely on the data.
That's true, yeah. So ask Bill Belichick about the reliability of the forecasters out there.
Yeah, the forecasters hates those, hates microphones, hates a lot of things, hates fantasy owners, as we have come to see over the years. But nevertheless, it's something to keep an eye on. I mean, any place where winter can be a factor, it's already a factor. So definitely be sure to double check the weather either Saturday or ideally even Sunday morning, just to make sure that wind or snow aren't factors. Let's talk about the Vikings and Packers. Green Bay going up to Minneapolis. I think it's the first time these teams have played outdoors in Minneapolis since 1981. Matt Asiata is going to be out for this one with a concussion. Makes sense that the Vikings went after Ben Tate. I mean, he's a guy that's probably going to back up Jerick McKinnon. McKinnon's been slowed by a back injury. He's probable. He's been a limited participant in practice throughout the week, limited on Friday, but it sounds like he'll be okay to go. Definitely check if you're planning on using him since it's an early kickoff in this game anyway. Greg Jennings has a rib injury. He's questionable, but he fully participated in Friday's practice. Jarius Wright, also questionable with a hamstring injury, but a full participant. And Kyle Rudolph, who was active last week but didn't do anything, is listed as probable. Starting with Rudolph, I mean, is there any scenario where you'd even roll the dice on him right now, or are you going to wait until you see him get involved again with this Vikings offense before even taking the chance?
I think, you know, if you have to roll with him, I mean, you probably know that you're in that situation. I definitely wouldn't be targeting him, especially in like a tournament or in a daily league, expecting things out of him. I mean, you might just be kind of up against the wall and have no real choice in the matter, but I just don't have a good sense at all for how the Vikings are going to go about trying to put up points in this game. I mean, are they going to run the ball with McKinnon? Like, is that going to be how they start the game off? I don't see the Packers paying them much respect in the passing game at all. I think they're going to kind of force them to try to pass. And in that scenario, do you like their chances at all against that Packers secondary that's looked really good lately?
No, not at all. I just wonder, with Greg Jennings, of course, leaving the Packers 2 years ago, if he might be little extra motivation from Jennings, but I think that's pretty much a ship that has sailed at this point.
I mean, he might be motivated. I just don't see how it matters.
Yeah. It might just be completely irrelevant. And Charles Johnson led the Vikings in receiving last week. I continue to scratch my head looking at that one. But on the Packers side, a pretty healthy team right now, and that's what it comes down to a lot of times in December or January. The teams that are the healthiest, you know, the quality teams are the healthiest, often go on those deep playoff runs. Clay Matthews has probably been dealing with a groin injury. Seems like the opportunity at middle linebacker is something they may continue to stick with. And Brandon Bostic is out with a hip injury. But the tight end situation in Green Bay continues to be a revolving door. It's been Andrew Quarles. It's been a little bit of Bostic here and there. It's been a little bit of Richard Rodgers, too. Really, it's Devontae Adams we keep waiting for to step up as that third receiver. But even his role has been pretty inconsistent so far. Is there any reason to be more optimistic about Adams at this point than you were a few weeks ago?
No, I think it's kind of a holding pattern with him. And a lot of teams, I mean, you expect him to kind of show up because you expect teams to sort of take away Cobb or take away Jordy or try to take both of them away. But teams just haven't been able to do that. Both those guys have gotten loose in consecutive weeks. And I feel like that's going to continue against the Vikings. I think you're not going to see Devontae really have a big game until the Packers face a team that's competent enough on defense to force them to go to that third option.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. And there might be some points where you get to the postseason or something like that where Adams starts to step up a little bit more then. But I think as far as the week-to-week fantasy value goes, it's probably not going to come together unless we see Matthews or Cobb go down with an injury at some point. Let's talk about the Eagles. They're going to host the Titans this week. Jordan Matthews dealing with a knee injury. He is probable. Really, ever since Mark Sanchez took over at quarterback, Matthews' role has expanded. Rest of the season, do you look at Matthews as a possible top 20 receiver?
Yeah, I think he's kind of right on that fringe. I think I'd give him the edge over, you know, over a guy like maybe Sammy Watkins, just kind of based on the offense. I'd still have Mike Evans and Odell Beckham over him, I think, in terms of rookies, just because they seem to be the number one option in their offense. But he's that number three guy amongst this wide receiving class for me, and, you know, fringe top 20 guy. I got a couple questions in our Ask the Expert feature that we have on the website about people wanting to start Matthews over Julio Jones this week. I shut those down. I said, you got to start Julio Jones, but I totally kind of get where they're coming from. I mean, the guy keeps going off. Julio's been a bit of a disappointment. So, I mean, that's kind of where he's at right now. People want to get him in their lineups. And, you know, I think the Eagles kind of win big here. So I'd like to get him in, but maybe not over a guy like Julio.
Yeah, Tennessee played a much closer game with the Steelers than I expected. I mean, we talked about that, I think, on the Monday podcast. I didn't see a scenario that could keep it close. Somehow they did. But yet, Ken Wisenhunt basically punted the game away in the fourth quarter because that's what he does. But I'm with you on Matthews. I think the value is definitely ticking in that direction. The frustration with Julio Jones, I definitely understand where it's coming from. That said, I have not experienced it firsthand. So it's one of those guys that by not living up to expectations, Julio Jones is actually helping me as a fantasy owner.
And you, yeah, I mean, you're not really noticing the lack of his, you know, performance. So, I mean, it's a lot easier to kind of not think twice about recommending him as a starting option. And I'm kind of in that same boat as well. But yeah, I mean, Matthews, I just think you look at the Vegas line on this game. I think it's like it opened at like 11 points in Philly's favor coming off that blowout loss to the Packers. I just think that this has all the makings of just a bounce back game where they're going to be practicing hard all week. And they're going to have something to prove, and I think they might win by, you know, two or three scores.
I thought I saw something roll by on TV earlier today suggesting that LeSean McCoy's role might shrink a little bit and Darren Sproles might be more involved. And Sproles was really involved in that game early in the year against the Colts, but otherwise it's been really difficult to get a feel for how much he's going to be used. I think he had double-digit carries against the Jags in week one, and LeSean McCoy had 20-plus carries in that game. But I'm not worried about McCoy losing a couple of touches. I think this matchup in particular is very favorable. We saw Le'Veon Bell go over 200 yards from scrimmage against the Titans on Monday night. I think the price on DraftKings for McCoy was down at like $6,200, which is more than $2,000 below Matt Forte. It's quite a bit lower than Forte. And I don't expect Forte-type production, but I think it's at the point now where buying McCoy on DraftKings and trying to even get him in a full-season league for the stretch run, he finally now might be affordable. Like the owners who kept believing in him may have caved to the point where you can get him for a guy that you would otherwise maybe draft in the second round or something if you were drafting today. Like there's finally a buying opportunity.
Yeah, this is a much more blatant example of what we were talking about with Julio Jones, at least in my case, because I don't have any McCoy shares. And I've been saying all year that, like, you know, just be patient. He's gonna turn it around. He's going to give you top five running back production down the stretch. So I keep saying that. Obviously, it's not hurting me on a week-to-week basis when he doesn't do that. But, yeah, I think if you can get him at that price, I like him as a tournament play. I think he could go crazy against this Titans defense.
Big game in the NFC West. Arizona going on the road to Seattle. Larry Fitzgerald is a game-time decision. He's dealing with a knee injury. And to make matters worse, this game kicks off at 4:05 Eastern, so you're going to have to deal with the late decision. But I'm not expecting him to play. I mean, he was diagnosed with a grade 2 sprain of his knee. Grade 2 sprains are usually 3-5 week injuries in a lot of cases. I just don't see a scenario where he plays and plays well. So I'd plan on sitting him even if he's active.
Yeah, and I mean, you throw in the fact that it's in Seattle, you got that Seattle secondary. There's nothing to like about this situation if you're a Fitzgerald owner. Plan on starting someone else.
You're not on Team Drew Stanton, are you?
Is that a team?
It's a real team. There are people out there that at least pretend to like the guy. I don't see it. I don't see NFL starting quarterback. Maybe competent backup is a level I can get to at some point, but I just don't like the guy.
I like to think that the Arizona coaching staff and front office kind of knows what they're doing. I mean, they do have the team with the best record in football right now. I'd like to think that they're pretty competent, a pretty competent bunch. They extended Carson Palmer with that big deal. I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have done that if they thought that there was a team Drew Stanton to be on or to be a part of. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think he's just a backup.
Andre Ellington has probably been dealing with a foot injury all season, got a hip ailment as well. He should be just fine. But Seattle's run defense is one of the best run defenses in the league. Andre Ellington over the last four games averaging less than 3 yards per carry. For the season, I think he's at 3.4. It's been a problem all season long, and I don't feel like it's going to get better even in other matchups just because opposing teams can load the box against the Cardinals and try to make Stanton beat them. I think this is going to be a major problem for Ellington in terms of his rushing yardage, but he catches so many passes, he can kind of offset the lack of efficiency on the ground with his contributions as a receiver.
So if Arizona were to keep this game close, who do you think does the damage on offense for them?
It would be Ellington. It'd be like a lot of receptions, though, because we're talking, I mean, in a couple of their games this year, he had 6 catches. It's 6 for 72 against Oakland, 4 for 112 and a score in that loss to Denver. I think he needs to have that type of a contribution in the passing game if they're going to win. The only other way I could see it happening, defensive or special teams touchdowns, and maybe like a long play to John Brown. Like those are the couple of different ways that they could do it. I don't see Michael Floyd doing anything after the big game last week. I think the Seahawks will make him a non-factor. Again, I'm not expecting Larry Fitzgerald to play, but even if he does, far from 100%. So I think it's Ellington as a receiver, maybe a big play to John Brown, and defense or special teams really stepping up if they're going to come away and get a win or even just keep this game really close.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them.
Seattle is such a nasty place to play. with that home field advantage. On the other side, Marshawn Lynch is probable with a back injury. Life also probably making him probable as it impacts Doug Martin, as we talked about earlier. Bobby Wagner is probable with a toe injury. I think he missed five games or six games now with that injury. If he's available in your IDP league, you definitely want to pick him up. Tons of potential tackles, 10-plus per game, really, I think, is a reasonable expectation for him over the course of the year. As you look at this Seattle offense, they continue to get further away from that Percy Harvin trade with the Jets. Is there anybody in that group of pass catchers that you trust in this matchup or going forward that you're kind of intrigued by?
I mean, intrigued definitely isn't the word I would go with. Doug Baldwin, I guess, is a guy that, you know, in a deeper league, in a 14-team league, and maybe in a 12-team league where you kind of load it up on running backs, I think he's a viable option, but not a guy that I'm expecting more than, you know, 65 yards, maybe a touchdown every now and then. That kind of production out of him. Nobody that's going to go for, you know, a buck 20 and like two touchdowns anytime soon.
Sean Hill and the Rams going on the road to San Diego. Jared Cook, the only real notable Ram, banged up for this one. He's got a back injury and he's questionable. He was limited in practice throughout the week. If Cook doesn't play, is there anybody else that you'd like to possibly pick up a few extra red zone targets?
I don't know, Kenny Britt, maybe? He did go crazy against one of our teams last week, so I'm aware of it for that reason.
You're fearing Kenny Britt. It's okay, so just as like not having shares of McCoy or Julio Jones makes all of us more comfortable with the idea of continuing to play them, if you get burned by a guy like Kenny Britt...
now I'm all of a sudden scared of him. I'm viewing him as a viable option.
You have the irrational fear of Kenny Britt, and then you look at the waiver wire and you're like, hey, Kenny Britt's out there.
Gosh, he killed me last week.
Maybe I should use him. San Diego's corners are good. I mean, that's a big part of it. They actually have a pretty good secondary overall, so I could see this being a pretty ugly game. I mean, St. Louis, with this coming off the big win over Denver last week, I could see them going to San Diego and having a huge letdown sort of day.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Hill throws three or four picks, and the Rams get by with like a Greg Zuerlein field goal and lose by 20 plus.
Yeah, I don't mind starting Trey Mason here as a RB2, but I don't really want any part of the passing game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we both are pretty big fans of what Trey Mason might be able to do. Let's take a look at the San Francisco Washington matchup. Redskins going on the road to face San Francisco. San Francisco is very healthy at this time. No real relevant injuries as we look at this one. But on the Washington side, Jordan Reed's going to miss this game with a hamstring injury, which opens the door for Niles Paul to be a contributor again. Is Niles Paul a must-add in leagues where you're scrambling for a tight end?
Well, I'd rather have Niles Paul than like Kyle Rudolph this week. I mean, if it's that kind of a situation, then I think that he's a fine person to go add. I just don't, the way this offense is running right now, I don't really want any of these guys. I mean, if you have a guy like DeSean Jackson or Alfred Morris, you're probably running them out there. But, I mean, can you be that confident based on what we saw from the quarterback play last week, especially against the San Francisco defense that seems to be keeping these games fairly low scoring?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. San Francisco leads the league in interceptions as a defense right now with 16. With Robert Griffin, I don't want to give up on him long term. I was listening to a radio show while driving home last night, just a nationally syndicated show, like an evening one. And the way the guy hosting the show, I don't even know what show it was, this guy was just burying Griffin. I mean, he was like, well, when he was a rookie, he was better than Luck, and now Luck is so much better. It's like, well, yeah, that's true, but you're not even talking about the fact that he tried to play through a damaged knee and then tore ligaments and then came back quickly, all in the name of basically Mike Shanahan trying to keep his job. And, you know, you take a guy who needs his mobility to be at an optimal level, you take that away, even temporarily, that causes a problem. And that's the lost development time. Ankle injury this year, yeah, it's fluky, it's bad luck, but you can't come into the league and be as productive as Robert Griffin was unless you're actually good. Like I still think there's a good player there. I'm just not confident that we're going to see it this year. I think he needs another full offseason to, one, get healthy, and two, get a lot more comfortable in Jay Gruden's offense if he's still there next year. It seems like there's some friction, I guess, between team and quarterback and coach and quarterback. So maybe his future is somewhere else, but I'm just not ready to bury Robert Griffin at this point.
The thing about You know, I just don't really. I try not to get caught up in, you know, like, is RG3, you know, worth the trouble? Like, what's he going to do long term? I just don't really have time for that. I mean, I don't have much invested in it. But if you look back at his rookie season, 815 rushing yards, 7 rushing TDs, I think it's pretty fair to say that that's not going to happen again, just based on the injuries you mentioned. I don't see a coach okaying him to be that active on the ground, and I don't see him having that same sort of explosiveness when I've seen him run this year. I mean, sure, he might get healthier in a couple of years, but I just don't see that same kind of explosiveness. I think that he's getting more cautious as a runner, even though that probably doesn't come very natural to him. So he's going to have to do a lot of his damage, I think, through the air. He's not a guy like Andrew Luck who's going to be a legitimate threat to rush it in, you know, at the 5 or 10 yard line. I think that there's just too many big bodies down there that are going to blow him up. He doesn't have that kind of a frame to withstand that kind of pounding. So if he is going to have a solid fantasy season in the future, I think a lot of it's going to have to come through the air, and that's kind of to be determined if he can pull that off. But yeah, I mean, the rest of the season, I'm not a big fan.
I mean, there's a certain amount of indecision in Griffin right now, which makes me wonder if he landed in a place like Philadelphia eventually with Chip Kelly, or even Arizona with Bruce Arians, if being in a system that suits him better would ultimately get him back on track. I feel like there's reason to be confident there. Like a guy doesn't want to make mistakes isn't the worst kind of quarterback. It's a frustrating problem because you take unnecessary sacks and maybe you miss opportunities downfield because you're not taking chances. But he has the arm strength. He has the tools. Like, the pieces are there. He's not a guy who's miscast as an NFL starting quarterback. And I just think it's too easy to get on the bandwagon of burying RG3. But I think we're on the same page as far as this year. It's probably not going to come together for him over the course of the second half. Sunday night game this week, Dallas going on the road to play the Giants. Tony Romo, probable with that back injury, coming off the bye. Pretty standard procedure, I think, at this point. DeMarco Murray is healthy after dealing with that concussion a couple of weeks ago, or it wasn't even a concussion, but he was evaluated for a concussion, returned to the game, apparently didn't have one. So it seems like the Cowboys are pretty healthy coming off the bye. Giants are actually pretty healthy too. Rashad Jennings is not on the injury report. I'm expecting both backs in this game to have big games. Like, DeMarco Murray and Rashad Jennings going toe-to-toe, that might actually be one of the best running back matchups of the week.
Yeah, and throw in the fact that it's outdoors, you're not sure what the weather's going to be like. I'm with you. I like Rashad Jennings a lot this week. You know, I think he's a fringe top 10 back. The Cowboys rush D's, nothing too scary. I kind of wish it was in Dallas, though, just because I want to see, you know, the pass catching options in these offenses kind of go off. That might not happen, depending on what the weather's like. You know, Odell Beckham mentioned, I think, that he could have had a huge day if this was in a dome, but yeah, I mean, I think both running backs, excellent plays.
I'm not too worried about cold, but wind is the one, yeah, I look for more than anything else. And obviously heavy snow is a problem because players are going to slow down considerably. But let's take a look here at the get to know your host question for today, James. What is hands down the best appetizer?
Well, I don't know. You can kind of rule on this and decide if I'm cheating or not by using this, but you know, the last time I had it, it was at the Tornado Room and it was on the menu as an appetizer, and that's oysters. So if I go to a restaurant like a steakhouse and oysters are an option as an appetizer, that's going to be my go-to. I'm going to order it pretty much every single time. If you're not going to count oysters, I mean, I like to view that as an entree at certain restaurants as well, so I could understand maybe not going in that direction. But I'm a pretty big fan of potato skins, and that's not a very common go-to, I guess. But, I mean, I'll take potato skins over, you know, French fries, over cheese curds if they're on the menu.
Yeah, cheese curds, I think, would be a popular answer in this part of the country. Good cheese curds are hard to beat, but I think you can count oysters. If we're going to count oysters, I think crab cakes would be my favorite, right? Because I mean, some people do take that as an entree, but I just want a couple crab cakes before my steak. And look, in Wisconsin, crab cakes, not necessarily a thing you're going to find most places. And if you find them, yeah, you typically don't want to eat them.
Well, yeah, like that's the thing is, like, you have to go, if you want to order the two appetizers we just said and you want to order them in a place like Wisconsin, you have to go to like the nicest place in town to be able to get you know, that type of food where you're going to be willing to eat it.
Right. The properly sourced, appropriately prepared stuff that's not, you know, 3 weeks old or made from frozen, that would be the worst. Like just having something that was in a freezer for a month and then turn into crab cakes. That would be a disaster.
I'll give you a pro tip. I used to work in a restaurant where we served crab cakes and it was actually faux crab. It wasn't even real crab.
Oh, imitation crab?
Imitation crab. So, you know, I would definitely recommend asking before you order, is this legitimate crab? Because they don't actually have to say that it's not legitimate on the menu. You have to ask them and double check on that because it does, it has that crab taste, but it's not actually, I don't even really know what it is.
Outstanding tip, though. You're right, because stupid rules, man. They should have to disclose that. Like, they should have to write right underneath crab cakes, made with fake crab, because that's bogus.
You're basically just eating, like, white fish that's got crab flavoring in it.
White fish.
And you're paying, like, whatever, $20 for it.
White fish, which is just, is white fish technically even the species name, or is that just a generic food
just
term?
Farmed fish that they just grow. They just have a bunch of fish in a pool and pull them out and have some crab seasoning added to it and charge you a bunch of money for it.
That's terrible, man. That's just terrible. Fantasy football is in full swing, and DraftKings.com isn't messing around. DraftKings.com is America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where you could win enormous cash prizes every week. You already researched the players for your season-long fantasy team. Turn that knowledge into instant cash at DraftKings.com. Last year, one player turned $11 into $4,000 in one weekend. Another won $100,000 his first time ever playing. This season alone, seven players have won $1 million in one day just playing fantasy football. Keep your season-long league where it is, but also play one-week fantasy at DraftKings.com to win huge cash this weekend. Hurry, head over to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code ROTOWIRE for free entry. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter ROTOWIRE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. You can check out the Millionaire Maker for Week 12, where first place will once again bring home $1 million. It's a lot of crab cakes, real crab cakes especially. You can go a long way with $1 million at a good steakhouse or seafood place. James, thanks for pinch hitting for Mario this week, and hopefully we'll do it again soon on a Friday, but we'll talk to you on Monday. We're going to talk AFC injuries now. To do that, we'll bring in RotoWire senior football editor Mike Doria. And Mike, we've got a couple of games in particular that stand out to me from an injury standpoint. We're going to start with the Texans. They're going to be hosting the Bengals this week. We'll start with Arian Foster, which I feel like every week for the rest of the year when we talk on Fridays, we're going to talk about Arian Foster. Didn't practice on Friday. It's an early kickoff, fortunately. Do you think there's any chance we're actually going to see him play, though?
Well, there's a chance, but, I mean, he missed practice the last couple of days, and I'm really not optimistic. Coach Bill O'Brien keeps on, you know, referring to Foster as a game time decision, but the Texans are 5-5. I mean, it's in their best interest to, make sure that they don't push Foster to the point that he's unavailable for the stretch. And I mean, in last week's game, Alfred Blue, had a ton of carries. Jonathan Grimes got in the action as well, and they handled it just fine. And I think that they're probably gonna roll that way again, although those guys aren't going to get the kind of volume they had last weekend, obviously. I mean, Blue had, I believe, 36 carries.
Yeah, it was crazy how many carries the Texans running backs were getting last week. And, I mean, the Bengals' run defense is a little bit weak, so there is an opportunity there. I think injuries have really depleted what Cincinnati can do on that side of the ball, but I wouldn't expect 36 again. I'd expect maybe high teens or low 20 range. The Houston offense is more run first. Ryan Mallett maybe will air it out a little bit more this week than he did last week, being that he's still very inexperienced as an NFL quarterback. But
yeah, he does have a good arm, but their success is going to be ground based, I believe.
Play good defense and then run it effectively, I think, is going to be the recipe. Looking at the Bengals side, Gio Bernard is expected to return. He's listed as probable. Got quite a bit of work in practice over the course of the week for a guy coming off a reasonably significant injury. But how do you see the carry split working out?
Well, I mean, I've heard as high as 65-35 in favor of Hill. I'm not necessarily buying into that. Maybe more along the lines of 50-50. Game flow type thing, hot hand type thing. But, I mean, after a 27-carry, 152-yard effort in Week 11, Jeremy Hill definitely deserves a piece of the pie there. I guess the one thing that you can kind of count on for Bernard is involvement in the passing game. So as a flex PPR option, I think he's viable. And I mean, he could surprise with his amount of carries this week, but it's not something that we can rely on. We need 1 week of evidence of him playing well, avoiding setbacks, and you know, them not relying too heavily on Hill. And so he's in daily leagues. I think Bernard is a bit of a dart. I think if you own him in year long formats, you have to seriously consider him, though.
Yeah, fortunately, with just two teams on bye, we're not as depleted as we have been the last few weeks in terms of our choices in most leagues, but it is something to consider. Vontaze Burfict for the Bengals, by the way, out with a knee injury on that side. So yet another piece missing from that Cincinnati defense. I think the other game people are looking at very closely this week from an injury standpoint is that Dolphins-Broncos matchup, especially the Denver side. It sounds like Emmanuel Sanders is good to go. He's listed as probable. Surprising after the hit he took last week.
Absolutely, but he's been cleared, practiced fully today, so it looks like he's good to go. And that's a bit of a disappointment for some people that were throwing some free agent bidding money around for Andre Caldwell and Cody Latimer. But, I mean, Sanders has been great this year when he's on the field, and it looks like he's a go this week.
Tricky thing about this game, 4:25 Eastern kickoff, and Julius Thomas is the guy who's going to give fantasy owners a lot to think about. He is questionable to play in this game and officially considered a game-time decision. What's your expectation here with Thomas? I mean, did he do enough in practice to where you think there's a chance he plays, or do you think that he's going to get a week off?
Well, did he do enough in practice? The answer would be no, since he was listed as a did not practice all week, although he was technically on the field today. He was listed as a non-participant on the official injury report. It sounds like Coach John Fox didn't quite know exactly how to list him, so they listed him as a non-participant. So he's very iffy, and as you mentioned, that that's part of the second wave of kickoffs on Sunday. So that's a tough call there, especially since, and you probably went over some of this with James, and we'll talk more about some of the other guys. A lot of tight ends are banged up this week, either already ruled out or very iffy. And Thomas is certainly among those players.
It's a rough week in daily. I mean, because you've already had Travis Kelce play on Thursday. Michael Rivera has been useful a few places. He's not available. Thomas is banged up. Dwayne Allen's banged up. I mean, you've got a bunch of guys that are either out or limited at that position. So you have to pay the premium for Graham or Gronk, or you have to roll the dice on a much less desirable option than usual. That middle tier is not really there at tight end this week.
Yeah, I'm finding that with tight end, the position scarcity of the elite players is making it like worth the Gronk or Graham investment almost on a weekly basis. I mean, I'm sure a lot of other people are thinking that way, but when you get your bargains on the running backs and the wideouts and the quarterbacks, even where do you spend your extra money? I've been using it on a real tight end every week.
Thinking about next year, how I would handle a snake draft, I would be comfortable late if I had a late first round pick. I would, and Graham or Gronk were there, I'd be comfortable taking one of those guys. Coming back, I'd be okay taking Aaron Rodgers potentially, and then in round three, potentially grabbing my first receiver, because running back's been so volatile and the lack of depth at tight end. Part of it's like Vernon Davis, for example, has been horrible this year. He's been a complete non-factor. I've had a couple of guys like that that have disappointed. Jordan Cameron being hurt is yet another reason why that middle tier hasn't been as good. So there's a few different things that have come into play, but I think you're going to see a lot of owners who want to be more aggressive at tight end, maybe not as many at quarterback, but having Aaron Rodgers in the stake league this year in particular has really made me realize that not only do you have to only carry one quarterback most of the year, that extra roster spot's pretty valuable in that league. You just don't worry about what you're going to get week to week. When you mix and match, which is something I typically do, I wait on the quarterback and play the matchups, you can be wrong. I mean, there's things that backfire. Guy has a bad day. Maybe a defense steps up and has a big performance. You just don't get burned with the elite quarterbacks nearly as often.
Yeah, I mean, that's a strategy I took in at least one league this year in which I owned Rodgers. And then in my the league I've been playing in the longest, I drafted Jimmy Graham in the first round. I mean, it's been a long time since I would have felt comfortable doing that. It reminds me of when Tony Gonzalez was, you know, head and shoulders the top tight end, and he he was oftentimes a first round pick. But yeah, there's just such a big drop off at that position that it's very defensible to be aggressive next year, especially.
On the other side of this Broncos-Dolphins matchup, we're talking about the Lamar Miller being questionable. He's expected to play, but he's got shoulder and knee injuries now. Where did this knee injury come from?
Out of nowhere, I think. I mean, all week long until today, it was just the shoulder that was being listed on the injury report. And I was reading that, you know, he felt like he was largely past the shoulder injury. They had a little extra time since their last game. But the knee issue cropped up. I mean, he was limited. So, I mean, a couple of the main beat writers, Barry Jackson, Salguero from the Miami Herald, they both said that they expect him to play. It's, you know, hopefully we'll get a better pulse on that because of the later kickoff. But it seems like he's going to give it a go. But now it's no longer one of those like questionable but really probables. It's something that you want to monitor because I think they only have two guys listed as questionable now, and he's one of them.
Speaking of the Dolphins injury report, too, we have Charles Clay listed as doubtful with the hamstring knee injury combination. Is there anybody else who could step up and take on that role that you actually trust, or is it more just someone steps up and the targets go elsewhere?
I mean, Deion Sims is going to see some looks. I mean, I don't necessarily advocate him as a high upside play, but if you're really scrambling, and some people are at the tight end position, then he's worth a look.
Ryan Tannehill, Mike Wallace, and Jarvis Landry all probable for the Dolphins, yeah, so the Dolphins nothing to worry about there.
Typically have a pretty long injury report, and everybody's listed as limited. But, yeah, those guys are fine. But, yeah, definitely keep an eye on Miller, but looks like he'll probably play.
It's Josh Gordon Day in Atlanta as the Browns go on the road to play the Falcons. Jordan Cameron is going to miss this game for Cleveland. He's got a concussion. I believe it's his third in something like 2 years, so it could be a little while before he comes back. He may not come back at all this year.
Well, you know, he actually practiced today on a limited basis, and now there's hope that he's coming back. They could come back next week. So while I wouldn't count on that, I mean, it's definitely the tone has changed since last week when it was like what you just described. You know, he may not come back. So if you've held on to him this long, hang tight. And if he's floating around in your league, he might be worth a slot on your bench there to see what happens.
Yeah, Gary Barnage and Jim Duray will fill in for Cameron here in week 12. But, of course, the attention will be on Josh Gordon. Remember last year, Josh Gordon came back from suspension in week 3, played against Minnesota. He was targeted 19 times, caught 10 balls for 140 yards and a touchdown. And with that production, I mean, you're excited because he's a part of the game plan right away, but that was only a 2-week layoff. Yeah. This is a little bit longer. So I don't know if 19 targets is necessarily fair to expect, but Gordon's a guy that it sounds like this time maybe he gets it. Like the reports out of Cleveland have been excessively positive, but it's, for some reason I buy into it because it seems like not only are people looking at Gordon and say, yeah, this guy seems like he's focused, he's changed. The offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, made it pretty clear they're not expecting to ease him in. They expect to just use him like they normally would.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the 19 targets is definitely probably an unrealistic figure for him to reach out of the gate there. But yeah, I mean, they're going to use him. I don't think they're going to use him quite full time. I mean, as you pointed out, the long layoff. Coach Mike Pettine is a little bit, of the he's not quite in great football shape, and I can see that being an issue. But he can get open. He's got the good hands, and they're looking for a spark. He'll provide it definitely down the stretch. I would just say he's worth starting, but temper your expectations maybe in his first game back.
Yeah, I would definitely, if you held on to him this long, I would definitely have him in my lineup. I mean, there's not many scenarios where I have three receivers I like better if you're in a league where you have to start three.
Yeah, so you're going to beat yourself up if he does go off, and the ceiling is there, and it's a high one. So presumably whoever you're benching in favor of Gordon is your number three receiver in typical formats. So that's a guy that you're not always counting on to produce every week anyway.
Got a handful of other early kickoffs. Jags going on the road to Indianapolis. Jacksonville pretty healthy coming off their bye week. Allen Hurns is not listed on the injury report. He was dealing with a concussion going into the bye week. And I mean, Hurns flashed some potential earlier this year. Are you trusting him right now, or is it still going to be feast or famine?
It's a little bit feast or famine with Allen Robinson on IR. He's going to start, and you know, he's definitely worth a shot there. Him and Cecil Shorts are going to start, and who knows how long Cecil will stay healthy, although that's where he is right now. Marquise Lee could factor in down the road, but yeah, Hearns has the opportunity to get some volume this week.
Let's take a look at the running back situation for the Colts. With Ahmad Bradshaw out, Trent Richardson should have a huge workload. I don't think Dan Heron's going to do a lot, but at the same time, he's a speculative ad because if Richardson goes down, he's the guy.
Right. Well, Richardson, as sketchy as he's been this year at times, he was rostered. So Dan Heron is the guy that you're looking, you know, that's your dart. And I mean, Richardson is going to get the opportunity to fill in for the void created by the Bradshaw injury. And if he does well with it, well, there it is. The Colts finally get their money's worth.
Yeah, I could see this actually being a good spot. Jacksonville's not good against the run. Volume's there. Richardson does catch passes. It might be 20 carries for 70 yards, but if he gets a touchdown and he catches a couple passes, that's actually a pretty good day from a fantasy standpoint. A lot of daily sites, I know on DraftKings, he's priced down pretty fairly. I'm actually using him in that setting. And I think with Richardson, ordinarily, he's like the green eggs and ham of fantasy players, where I just don't want him on my team. I don't want to use him in any setting. I don't like him in daily. I don't like him in season long. But this week, in this matchup, this is that rare spot where I feel pretty comfortable about taking the chance on Trent Richardson.
Yeah, I think Heron only gets significant carries if Richardson really struggles. And, you know, that could happen. Richardson stalls a few drives. Heron goes in, provides a spark. They start giving him more carries, but that's not anything I'm counting on.
Dwayne Allen is out with an ankle injury. At least there's some clarity on that going into the weekend. Kobe Fleener should take on a very large role. Big game last week. Is he a top 10 tight end right now if you're looking at the options on the board with all the injuries we talked about?
Weekly, for sure. I mean, he went off against the Patriots, 7 catches. Caught all of his targets, actually, 144 yards. Didn't have a game. Didn't have a bad game the week before when Allen was around. And, yeah, as you mentioned, there's a lot of tight ends that are banged up, and he's got a clear path to seeing most of the snaps at that position for a pretty strong offense this week.
Yeah, you got to like it. The idea of Fleener picking up most of Allen's targets. I mean, those two combined, if you're playing team tight end, would be as good as any team tight end in the league. Let's talk about the Titans. They're going to be going on the road to Philadelphia. Justin Hunter is questionable with a knee injury, and Delanie Walker is probable with a concussion. Hunter, this seems like a good spot to use him in a lot of ways because the Eagles' secondary is so vulnerable. I think they've given up the second most fantasy points to wide receivers this year, but you've got Hunter. If Walker plays, you've got Walker. You've got Nate Washington. You've got Kendall Wright. There's just not a lot of clarity there. I can never figure out which Tennessee pass catcher is actually going to go off if one does.
Yeah, I know we talk about that a lot. And you know, the fact that he's listed as questionable, I don't know exactly what that means. They're saying that he's expected to play. But based on his 2 catches for 48 yards last week, 1 for 17 the week before, he's been feast or famine. And you throw in the questionable designation, he's a hard player to trust right now in fantasy leagues. That's Justin Hunter. And Delanie Walker, hey, he's cleared. And even though he missed last week's game, he leads the team with 512 receiving yards in 9 games. A lot of that came in a couple of his big efforts, but... in this, the week of the tight end shortage, he's an option.
And maybe a guy that got dropped while he was hurt, too, just as something to look at in the waiver wire, potentially.
Absolutely.
Let's take a look at the Patriots. They're going to host the Lions, a relatively healthy Patriots team right now. Julian Edelman has a thigh injury. He's probable. I don't think that's going to be an issue. The one everyone's worried about for a variety of reasons, Jonas Gray. I mean, he's on the injury report with a non-injury situation. He was late to practice on Friday. Bad timing coming off that huge game on Sunday night. I was going through the scenarios in my head. I'm thinking, okay, so you just became, at the very least, you've started your 15 minutes of fame if you're Jonas Gray. They just signed LeGarrette Blount, which is a looming threat if you cough up a couple fumbles or if one fumble might be all it takes. I'm kind of wondering, did Blount go over to Jonas Gray's house and destroy his cell phone to keep the alarm on it from working, to like make him late for practice. Like, I feel like LeGarrette Blount is somehow responsible for Jonas Gray being late to practice.
Well, that's a creative scenario there. But yeah, I mean, apparently he overslept because his phone battery died, and he just missed his alarm. You know, I mean, if I played for the Patriots and I knew of Belichick's policy of essentially sending guys home if they show up late, I'd probably roll with the 2-alarm clock plan. And I mean, Jonas Gray, I'm not sure if he, when Darrell Revis was late, they sent him home, and he, his starting role was not impacted by that. But I mean, I'm sure that Gray was aware of that situation, and it, so it shouldn't come as a surprise that that could happen if you oversleep and you're under the rule of Bill Belichick. But I mean, I think he's going to play. I mean, there's almost, I mean, you want to check the inactives just to see if anything crazy happens on Sunday morning. But I think a bigger concern for Jonas Gray is the matchup. The Lions are really tough against the run. I mean, the Patriots game planned last week against the Colts, you know, to do the smash mouth thing, which they did successfully. But I think that if they want to attack Detroit and that defense, they're going to want to use Shane Vereen a lot more, you know, have him catch some passes out of the backfield. So I'm looking at Gray maybe doing something along the lines of 14 carries for 50 yards, and you hope for a TD.
You're more likely to beat the Lions on the perimeter running than you are on the interior. You know, then that's where I think Vereen's going to thrive and Gray would struggle. But yeah, this little extra alarm issue. The difference, I think, for me is that if Darrell Revis is late for practice or Tom Brady's late for practice, those guys are future Hall of Famers. Jonas Gray was basically a nobody until Sunday night. So I feel like the leash is different. But Belichick might not be the kind of coach that cares if you're a Hall of Famer or not. Like, it may just be you're late, you get one, everybody gets one free pass, and you know your punishment is leaving for the day. I don't know, not having to work doesn't seem like much of a punishment. But nevertheless, Jonas Gray, check the inactives list just to be sure and dial down the expectations based on what is likely to be a game plan that looks more to run outside. Let's talk about the Chargers pretty briefly here. They're going to host the Rams. Rams coming off that big upset of the Broncos last week. Phillip Rivers was pretty banged up in that game against Oakland last week, but he fully practiced on Wednesday. And this team as a whole actually seems pretty healthy now that they have Ryan Matthews back in the fold.
Yeah, well, Matthews is back, and I think he's ready to assume even a larger chunk of the carries. I mean, he dominated the carries, but definitely lost some snaps to his backups in his return to action. And I think he's ready to really assume that top role as long as he stays healthy. And Rivers, he was visibly banged up in the last game there. Then there was talk of a major rib issue, which they quickly downplayed. I mean, it's obvious he's dealing with some aches and pains, but he's going to play. No worries there.
Looking at the Monday night slate, and I say slate because there are actually two games. There's the originally scheduled Monday night game, the Ravens going on the road to New Orleans. The Ravens are healthy. There's really not much to dive into there. But the second Monday night game, which I think is actually going to kick off before the Ravens and Saints, are the Jets and Bills. That game has been moved to Monday and moved to Ford Field in Detroit because there are areas around Buffalo that have received 6 feet of snow since Monday. I can't even imagine what 6 feet of snow in that quickly, that short of a duration, would even look like.
Well, since you're about 6 foot tall, that's, you know,
right up to the hairline, probably.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a tough situation there in Buffalo. And somehow all the players managed to gather for the trip to Detroit. So they're going to have the full squad. But they weren't able to practice till Friday night, which that's a little bit of a disadvantage for the Bills, obviously. But, you know, I think they're going to rally. It's going to be a tough situation to get, you know, in sync with all the different variables that have happened. Health-wise, I think Fred Jackson is the main, you know, guy to pay attention to there. I think he's going to play, but I mean, the more important question with him is what will his role be? Dixon carried 10 times with 35 yards last week. Bryce Brown had the 7 catches for 57 yards. It's looking like, you know, Jackson returns to a three-headed committee that's not very fantasy friendly.
No, there's really nothing to get excited about there. Plus, the Jets are good against the run. If you're going to beat the Jets, you can throw all over them, but they've actually been good against the run all season long. So I guess if you had to be optimistic about one of these running backs, it's probably Jackson or Bryce Brown over someone like Bobby Dixon, just because Brown's been catching some passes, and Jackson's always a big part of the passing game when he plays.
Yeah, they're talking about Bryce Brown kind of being this, you know, filling that C.J. Spiller role, you know, pass catcher. So he's definitely a flex option every week. But, yeah, like not going to get the volume of carries you'd like to see from a running back in other formats.
It sounds like Sammy Watkins would have been a full participant had practice been going on as scheduled this week. He's been dealing with a groin injury, so there's not much to worry about there. On the Jets side, Chris Ivory has been fully participating in practice. He's been dealing with a shoulder injury. As we mentioned, the Jets have a good run defense. The Bills do, too. I mean, they have a good defense across the board, but they're good against the run and the pass. Ivory's a guy that I think you maybe could look at as a flex option in a full-season league, but otherwise, there's really nothing to get excited about on this Jets offense in this matchup.
No, I don't think so. I mean, on the plus side, Rex Ryan said everyone's probable this week for the Jets, and they're healthy. But, you know, Chris Johnson is still around, and as you mentioned, the Bills are not easy to run against. So not fired up about Ivory at all.
Jason Morrow is not on the injury report. He was dealing with an illness previously, but that appears to be a non-factor at this point. We're going to close things out, Mike, with the Get to Know Your Host segment. And the question I have for you today, what is hands down the best appetizer?
Yeah, unlike last week, I have an instant answer without reservation, and that is poutine. It's the comfort food of Quebec. It's for those of you who don't know of the glorious taste of poutine, it is French fries with brown gravy and cheese curds, and it's delicious. May not be the healthiest thing ever, but you know, in that climate, it's a nice comfort food.
I think healthy appetizers defeat the purpose. Like, there's something about an appetizer. Like, a good appetizer to me pretty much has to be junk food on a certain level for me to fully enjoy it. You know, if you think a veggie tray is an appetizer, you're wrong. It's not. It's something to eat with dinner, but it's not an app. It's its own thing. It's just a veggie tray.
I do enjoy hummus, but poutine destroys it in the appetizer showdown.
Yeah, poutine, of course, containing cheese curds. Cheese curds, I think, are pretty high on my list. But if James and I were talking about this, if you count crab cakes as an appetizer, I mean, they can be an appetizer or an entree. I think crab cakes are my favorite appetizer when done right.
Yeah, I mean, you might have to go to Baltimore for that to happen, but solid choice.
One time, Tornado Rooms had them. Usually they have frog legs instead, but one time we've been there and they've actually had crab cakes, and I swear if they have them this year at the steak dinner, I'll be getting several orders of them because I love the crab cakes when they get them in. Hard to get good crab in Wisconsin, though. It's not
The only way that you're not going to be an eater in that league is if you start forgetting to set your lineup every week, and I know that we reference it in the podcast, but it is the league that RotoWire staffers are most afraid of losing.
Yeah, the penalty in the steak league, if you lose, you got to buy someone else's steak dinner plus your own. In the Madison division, not nearly as bad as the Los Angeles division. I feel like it's $100 or $120 at the high end for a share of the dinner. Usually I think it's closer to 80.
The LA guys are like ordering to-go desserts.
Right, yeah, we've got a few more ground rules here in our division to make it more manageable, but I've had, I think, a three-year stretch where I've been a buyer 3 years in a row. Finally, looks like I won't be in that category if I get to eat a year on someone else's dime.
Still angry at me for liking shrimp cocktail and ordering it every year.
I'm actually just more mad that they don't always have crab cakes, because if I could just get crab cakes and eat those, then I wouldn't, you know, whatever. I lost, so I have to pay. But the fact that I don't get the appetizer I want because I don't have one that I really like, that's the frustrating part. But yeah, I'm not a shrimp cocktail guy. You got to cook the shrimp. That's just the way I like shrimp when I decide to eat it. Frying it, also good.
Yeah, and unlike daily, the main difference between our steak league and daily leagues is that this is a league that you're afraid of losing. And in daily games, you want to go for the gold. You want to separate yourself from the pack, and so it's a much different approach.
Definitely agree with you there. There's a game the next week or the next day, of course, if you're playing other sports besides football. Thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. Also, check out RotoWire for free for the next 10 days by going to RotoWire.com/pod. For Mike Doria and James Anderson, I'm Derek Van Riper. Good luck in week 12.